All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
All right, let's get to the top news. With 1 week left in session, Minnesota lawmakers have reached a deal to spend the state's historic $9 billion surplus. And they held a press conference at 10 this morning, and Governor Waltz made the announcement.
In a time of historic surpluses, in a time of economic uncertainty, the prudent and I think mature approach to this is to recognize Minnesotans need money back in their pockets right now. It makes sense to do that.
All right, so what can Minnesotans expect from this budget deal? Luckily, we have NPR News reporter Brian Bax, who was at the press conference this morning, and he joins me now with the latest details. Thanks for being with us, Brian.
Hi, Chris.
All right, so what do we know so far about where the money is going? I guess this is sort of like the basic foundation for us.
Right. This is the broad outline. So that's the big deal. There's going to be $4 billion over the next 3 years that lawmakers say will go to some form of tax relief. There's going to be another $4 billion that will go to schools, nursing homes, public safety, and other pressing needs that the state has over the same period. And there's going to be other money that's left aside. So now that we've got the big deal, there's a series of mini deals that we'll have to follow behind because the details are where this is going to either rise or fall.
Okay, so, Brian, there were a couple of issues that, I mean, you follow this so closely, but sort of rose to the fore in recent weeks or past few months. You know, one, you mentioned schools, well, funding for school staff and funding for public defenders across the state. And what's in this deal for them?
Well, so for the schools, they'll see about $1 billion of that $4 billion over the next 3 years. We don't know exactly how it's going to shake out. Senate Republicans have been adamant this year that a lot of that money go to literacy programs or put more money into teaching kids how to read at a younger age. House Democrats and the governor have talked about the need to put more toward buying down some of the special education costs that districts are facing and providing more in terms of mental health services and support services for students who are really still trying to recover from economic or education disruptions during the pandemic. Those are the types of things that they'll still have to work out. And you know, the governor pointed to the fact that these decisions will be made by those subject area experts. We've got more of Walls talking outside the Capitol here.
It's going to be tough work. It's going to be round the clock up here. They're going to have to reach some compromise, they being the conference committees, but we're leaving that open to them. I think the system works best if we do that, but I think many of you are anticipating some of the pitfalls here that could possibly be, but this is a big first step to get it to there to set those parameters.
And Brian, talking about big first steps, the tax cuts, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. benefits? And how permanent are they? Because the permanence of the tax cut, as I understand it, was, you know, that was one of the, you know, the tough negotiating points.
Yeah, and that one is still fuzzy. Senate Republicans, by their majority leader, were out there today saying that they achieved some permanent tax cuts in this, but we don't know in what form that will be. They've been wanting to cut the income tax rate, and they've been wanting to make Social Security income free from any kind of taxation. Meanwhile, the Democrats, including the governor and the House, have been more targeted. They say that they want to do it in rebates and credits and other things that will get the money to the people that they feel are hurting the most. Those are the types of details that we'll hopefully know by midweek.
Okay, now I follow you on Twitter, and I saw that you did a tweet about the formula for this deal. You know, a third on taxes, a third on new spending, a third unspent, and it reminds you or similar to a Ventura era deal. So, you know, elaborate on that. What do you mean?
Yeah, back when Governor Ventura was in power, he had a Democratic Senate and a Republican House, and when they had a big surplus, they were really struggling as to how to get that money to various interests and needs that they were facing. And they finally came to this pretty simplistic deal, a third, a third, a third. You want a third to go to this, we want a third to go to that, and we'll jointly agree, or the governor will get to help to decide a third of this. You know, we talked at the outset about this $9 billion surplus.
Yeah.
There's actually more money in play here. This is $12 billion because they're looking out a few years into the future, both what they have in hand now and what they expect to come in. And the third component here is leaving $4 billion untouched because, Chris, as you know, this economy is really tough to figure out right now. It seems to be sizzling in the area of the job market and tax collections, but there's a lot of question marks about how long that's going to last. And lawmakers decided maybe we'll just wait a little longer to see how we're doing and whether that money will come in the door.
Okay, so Brian, you've been using terms like, you know, mini deals. These mini deals need to be negotiated. And fuzzy, that was one of the words you're using to describe this deal. So as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the 2022 session, it adjourns on May 23, which means the bills, they need to be in the governor's desk on Sunday. Are they going to do this?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because they can't take a vote on the last day of session to pass a bill. So the effective deadline is midnight on Sunday. So that puts a lot of pressure on these conference committees to wrap up these bills. Some of these bills are going to be hundreds of pages long with a lot of policy and a lot of spending considerations. Senate Majority Leader Miller said, let's just focus on where we agree and finally just toss out the stuff where people are going to go to the mat for. So they recognize that time is not their friend here.
So just off what you said, you know, it seems, and, you know, I'm an observer, I'm not, you know, steeped in it like you are, but it seems to me that Minnesota lawmakers are suddenly productive. I mean, you had an agreement on unemployment insurance, you got the direct checks for frontline workers, and now you have this budget deal. So what's the dynamic at work?
Well, money helps. There's been plenty of it before lawmakers this year, so there's no excuse that they can't necessarily afford to do this and that. And then all 201 legislative seats are on the line this year. The governor's office is on the line this year. People think they have a sense as to where things are headed politically, but they're not sure. And so I think they generally fear the wrath of voters if they deadlock here, because there's nothing that would compel them to do anything. The government wouldn't shut down if they don't get a deal here. So they feel like they just need to do just enough to tell voters that they're actually doing their work.
Okay, you mentioned elections, and you were down the weekend in Rochester at the GOP convention. Mm-hmm. And so what are your key takeaways?
Well, first of all, Scott Jensen won the endorsement in the governor's race, so he's most likely the candidate who will face Tim Walz in the fall election, although there potentially could be a primary. We're not sure yet. This party was really energized. The delegate base was a lot of first timers. And so, you know, if you look at kind of enthusiasm and who's drawing people into the process right now, Republicans feel like they have got some wind at their back. But their candidate, Scott Jensen, has taken a lot of pretty hard right positions on guns, on COVID, on other things, and public safety and so forth. And so the election integrity. And so he's going to have a tougher time tacking back to the middle. So if this becomes a race decided in the middle, as a lot of them are in Minnesota, this race could be much closer and much kind of more contested than we've seen in the past.
So we're nearly running out of time here, but I got to ask you one more thing, which is, what about the rest of the candidates? I mean, Scott Jensen, for obvious reasons, because one, it was, I guess it went on and on and on, a lot of votes, but it's also he's running for governor. But what about like candidates for state attorney general, for example?
Yeah, this time the Republicans went with somebody kind of fresh face, a 36-year-old attorney named Jim Schultz, who's new to the political scene. He'll be the likely candidate against Attorney General Keith Ellison, who many regard as the most vulnerable of the statewide office holders. There's still a chance that Doug Wardlaw, who ran against Ellison last time, will run in a primary. But at this point, it looks like Jim Schultz is the guy who you'll see opposite Keith Ellison on those debate stages.
Well, thanks a lot, Brian. That's NPR Politics Reporter Brian Baxt.